Okay, friends, hi. I've decided to do something different. This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 132, and should be A. And that will allow me, if I choose to go back and do some correlating, as I have the habit, either good or bad, of correlating, the next eight houses under 131B and 131C. But I won't do that right now. What I'll do is move forward instead in the book. And I'm simply going to trust that as we go along with this work, that your own ability to use Mercury as a correlator will increase and will help to unite the concrete mind to the abstract mind and the abstract mind to the pure reason or transcendental mind. And meanwhile, we also have Mercury rather in the center of the soul ruling the sun of mind. Mercury rules so many phases of the mind, but the mind is basically a correlating and arranging function. And it puts together combinations of perceptions which can prove indicative in relation to the finding of perceptions which are not yet perceived. Oh, don't write that down. It's probably terrible. Anyway, this next work is on the centers, the rays, and the signs. You can see that in this section of the book, DK is doing a lot of correlating and helping to fill in the etheric web, or at least the web of thought, because oftentimes it is impoverished, and we need to detect the many correlations which are possible. I'm going to put this here, EAA 131B and C may follow. Let's see. So we come now to consideration, brief and inadequate, but I hope suggestive, of the centers as they are related to the planets, viewing these planets as expressions of and transmitters of ray influences. Sometimes the word transmit has been used to express a process in which the planet receives a ray from another higher source and passes it on. And the word emit has been used to refer to a quality which is inherent in the planet and which it simply sends forward without having received it from a superior source. So the meanings of transmit and emit must be analyzed. I've had conversations with Nicholas Nilén about this, and he was pretty clear about the distinction between the two. Sometimes I think that DK uses the word pretty much transmit to cover all the possibilities. But in any case, we will see what DK means here. Now, you know, he's in the same position here on a much higher level than I am. There's so many things to consider, and given the limitations of Saturn and, you know, the 30 years he had to work with Alice Bailey, which was apparently a pre-planned span, and the many books he had to write, some of which perhaps he did not even write. I'm told by my friend Keith Bailey that he intended to write more on Masonry, but it could not be accomplished. So he has to choose. Saturn is always not this but that, or not that but this. You can't have it all under Saturn, but at least you concentrate on the things that are most essential. You will realize that I'm only dealing with the interplay between the planets and the centers where man is concerned, and only in a broad and general sense, because that interplay is dependent upon the point of evolution of whoever possesses these chakras, and whether the focus of life is below the diaphragm, which is so in the case of those upon the clockwise wheel. And above the diaphragm, in the case of the counterclockwise wheel. Or in process of transference from the lower to the higher. And indeed, many people on the path of aspiration are finding themselves precisely in that situation where the transference is in process. So the next point is, because the interplay is dependent upon, Well, always the broad and general sense in this book, as many details as it may have, but always the broad and general sense is pursued, at least in terms of the detail which DK might bring to the consideration, which probably for us would be unassimilable. Always, you know, with Virgo, you have to consider assimilation. With meticulous entirety under Virgo, you have to realize that maybe in time and after the third degree, rapidity of assimilation will be considerable, but before that time, a person can only assimilate so much and productively use so much. We know if we overeat, we're in trouble. The body just can't handle it, can't assimilate it, and is put into a state of distress. And there are comparable conditions in relation to the mind. Now, you know, you could say that what DK has written for us is in a way unassimilable, at least it's in its entirety, but then nobody's asking us to swallow it whole, you know, bit by bit, piece by piece, year by year, correlation by correlation, fact by fact, memory by memory, anticipation by anticipation. The larger picture is created, and the quality of the hidden vision emerges in our consciousness. So all of these correlations are dependent upon the point in evolution, because different planets and rays will be involved at different stages of evolution. And whether the focus is subdiaphragmatic or superdiaphragmatic, the rays of the personality and the soul, which will activate certain triangles and perhaps not others, certain triangles, and in a certain order where their points are concerned, especially the ray of the monad is involved with the manner in which the triangles are, points in the triangles are activated, first, second, and third aspect, but the rays of the soul and personality will probably contribute in a secondary manner to the method of activation. Obviously, you know, what we have to see, what is really required, is the reincarnational research, the ability to see where the individual has been and what has been the chakric unfoldment and the result of a particular life or several, a series of lives, and where it is going, whither it is going. This would be the most psycho-scientific work we can imagine. Accurate clairvoyance, the ability to read the Akashic records, the ability to hold the focus and to understand the meaning of that which was given. I'm sure the masters have their ways of doing this, and maybe in a somewhat, what is that word where you abbreviate it? Somewhat abbreviated form. I'm simply thinking of things that are necessary, but probably they have their abbreviated techniques to get the proper reading on any individual. So, you know, when the day comes when we are in the position that Master DK is, someday the day will come, where we can know the psyche of the people we intend to help, you know, even as is required in the first rule of healing, that one must train oneself to know the inner stage of thought or of desire of the one who seeks one's help. We will know, and we will not have to guess or get the occasional intuition, but mostly seeing through a glass darkly. When you're in the darkened room, you wake up to the fact that you're in the darkened room. You didn't know it before, the darkened room of limited consciousness, and you were maybe quite happy not knowing what was outside the darkened room. But once you've had a chance to see through a window, perhaps, and realize the nature of your containment, your confinement, then the divine discontent, reaching towards the other side of the room, or the other beyond the room, can become very disturbing. And I think that many aspirants and disciples who are seeing beyond the darkened chamber for the first time have that kind of distress related to divine discontent. Okay, another factor here, which is related to the type of interrelation you will find between the rays and planets and centers. The rays, centers, rays, and signs. Let's see if the planets get involved in it. Has to do with whether the centers are awakening, or is yet undisturbed. They're always there. They always have a function. The seven centers keep the organs going, so there must be a limited activity, at least, in order to keep the various chakras alive. But, you know, we could study the comparisons between the degrees of activation. You realize all the things that students have to go through when they're in medical school. Such a studies. I remember talking to a head of the department in the University of Minnesota long ago. I was, you know, working toward pre-med and felt it might be the way to go. But he says it's just inhuman what the students have to assimilate, and that at a much younger age than that at which I propose to enter. But think of it, we who are interested in the occult technicalities and how they work out, the picture they paint of the inner life, we have a lot to assimilate as well, and we can't simply use our five senses to do it. We have to use cultivated inner senses in order to do this, in order really to see and understand. So we have a ways to go here, don't we? Master Hilarion and Master Jesus have to get to work to produce the scientific psychic, the one who can reliably see what is happening. We have a long age of Aquarius ahead of us. It may seem short in comparison with greater cycles, but, you know, some 2160 years minimally, or conventionally or generally some 2500 years and another 100 years until we get there. It's a long time, and a number of incarnations will occur, and things will gradually unfold. You can understand the attitude of the masters, that they want things safely to unfold and not simply unfold. And also there is the necessity, we understand, to keep the Black Lodge from knowing what the divine plan really is in its details. So what extreme caution must be used by the masters as they release certain pieces of information and see to the growing enlightenment of their students. Enlightenment and stability, of course, have to go hand in hand, don't they? So only he says, he's talked so much in this section about the fact that we're just dealing with generalities. Only these generalizations are possible owing to the vastness of the subject and the immensity of detail in the world of effects. We would expect less detail. in the archetypal worlds, but sufficient to keep the mind attentively engaged. So he's speaking of the complications, and he's basically counseling patients here, because, you know, some people have read DK and says, well, why didn't he just come out and say it? You know, why didn't he just say directly all these things all in a concrete-minded manner? But then he would never stimulate our intuition. He teaches in a masterful way, because he says those things which are like seeds for the intuition. And otherwise, we would be dependent upon every concrete-minded revelation. We would have no intuitional capacity to reach into the higher worlds for ourselves. So another complication lies in the fact that though there are seven major centers, there are 12 planets in time and space which condition these centers. So it's the question of the 7 and the 12 when added to the 3 make the 22, the master number. There are various ways of arriving at This master number, which represents our solar logos at this time with his secondary personality and secondary soul. So for us, it's master and masterful, and the 11, which represents the hierarchy, is half of that. So the hierarchy is attuned in that way to the heart of the sun. I mean, you can get 21 and then take the wholeness of the whole and make it a unit and arrive at 22, or you can simply add the numbers, and this, as in this case, 19 plus 3 makes 22. It is the centers of initiates, which are ruled only by the seven sacred planets. How interesting. Because you know what this means? I suppose it may mean that the sacral center, which is usually considered ruled by Uranus, a sacred planet, may be ruled partially by another planet, for instance Mars, or for instance the Moon. In some cases he simply did not change. He said that the center of the average man is ruled by Uranus, but sacral center of the Ajna by Venus, but we can understand the possibility of some other rulerships there which are a lot less sacred than Uranus and Venus. So anyway, among average men, some of the sacred planets dominate, and some of the non-sacred, and some of the non-sacred. So you'd have to take an assessment of your own energy system. You know, in the solar plexus, do you find Mars or Neptune dominating? In the heart, do you find the Sun or Jupiter dominating? Well, he did give us something in the Ajna Center. He basically said Venus rules for both, but then later he said, after a higher initiation, probably the third, Mercury is found there. And let's see, what are the other doubles? Well, I said the heart and the throat center. What is ruling for you? Is it the abundant, fecund Earth, or is it Saturn? Or is it in some way the planet Uranus conveying the seventh ray at a certain point of evolution? We have to be so sensitive to the passage of the energies. What energy is really appearing at any one moment? Can we detect it, understand it, identify it? So among the average men, some of the sacred planets dominate and some of the non-sacred. So what is implied here, implied that the average man may be in transition. Either that, or he's simply saying that Venus always rules the Ajna Center and Uranus always rules the Sacral Center for whomever, and in which case the average man would have both those centers ruled by sacred planets, inevitably. In undeveloped man, the five non-sacred planets controlled with the head and the heart centers under the rule of two sacred planets. Oh, it's very interesting. Which planets are determined by the rays of the soul and the personality? So it's as if he's telling us that the upcoming chart on 517, as if he is telling that the chart on 517 is not always descriptive of the case. Now, when it comes to the five non-sacred planets, Pluto may rule the head center. The Ajna Center, the Ajna Center would have to be ruled by a non-sacred planet, because if we eliminate the, this is interesting, because he does give us Pluto as a ruler of the head center. Is he considering Pluto here in some way a sacred planet? So this is a bit of a reversal of the presentation coming up on 517. The sacral center as well. We have the Moon. We have the Earth. We have Mars. Mars will probably rule the solar plexus. The Moon can be associated, its duality, with the Ajna center. The throat center may be ruled by the Earth. But the heart center, he would say, is ruled by a sacred planet, namely Jupiter. But he may be saying something more. He may be saying that we are dealing with planets other than those presented on 517. I realize we haven't gotten to 517 yet. Makes me want to sort of flash over to that so you can see what I'm talking about. This is 517, and he deals here with the average man and the exoteric planets, and we see that certainly the head and the heart are not ruled by sacred planets, as he seems to be saying here, and here are disciples and initiates. So you might just want to freeze frame that or find it in your books. This is a very important chart to memorize, okay? So this is interesting. In the undeveloped man, the five non-sacreds control, with the head and heart centers under two sacred planets, but this is not the case for the so-called average man on page 517. Now, which planets being determined by the rays of the soul and personality? Here's the question. Are head and heart controlled by sacred planets which correlate exactly with the rays of the personality and soul, with the personality focused perhaps in the head and the soul in the heart? This is a question. Or are we looking at the certain sacred planets, like planets for the first, second, and third ray, and that they would rule the head and the heart center? This is an enigmatical statement, because usually the Sun and Jupiter are the rulers of the heart center. And Jupiter is the only sacred planet, and Pluto and Vulcan are the rulers of the head center, and Vulcan is the only sacred planet. So do Vulcan and Pluto persist? Oh no, do Vulcan and Jupiter persist as rulers of the head and heart respectively, or are there other planets which are correlated with the rays of the personality and soul? Generally, the heart is the seat of life, but the soul has an anchorage both in the heart and in the head. The head is correlated with Shambhala, but from another point of view, it can be considered, in the early phases of development, less sacred than the heart. So we're not exactly sure where to put the personality ray and where to put the soul ray, because we're dealing with super diaphragmatic centers, that is, the heart and the head. And we cannot put the personality, as usual, perhaps, in the throat or in the centers below the diaphragm. As the ray type does not emerge until there is some measure of advanced development, and this can be either the personality ray or the soul ray, it is obvious to you that the theme is thereby complicated still further, that dogmatic assertions are not possible until such a time as the astrologer is sure of the two major rays. So, for instance, let's just say if I had a second-ray soul and a fourth-ray personality, would Jupiter necessarily rule the heart center? And would some fourth-ray planet rule the head center, defining the personality? I only have the choice of Mercury. Really, the moon cannot be considered because we're dealing with sacred planets. See, how would this go? First of all, we don't know necessarily whether to put the personality in the heart or the head, or to put the soul in the heart or the head. The soul is involved in both cases. And the personality, well, it certainly has a lot to do with the Ajna center, but maybe not so much with the center at the top of the head. So that's one thing. We're not sure where to put put the personality and soul rays when connecting the soul and the connecting the head center and the heart center. The next thing is, will there be an exact correspondence of the soul and personality to the rays which, or the planets which are ruling these two centers? For instance, if I have a third ray soul, will somehow Saturn be involved in the heart center, let's say, if we decide the heart is the place where the soul goes? If I have a fifth ray soul, will Venus be the ruler of the heart center? A sixth ray soul, will Neptune? See, this is a very different statement, if I'm understanding him correctly, than some of the more conventional things he has said. So this has to be well analyzed, because it is a different presentation than usual. Normally, well, maybe he's saying that for the average man who's in the process of transition, some centers are ruled by the sacreds and others by the non-sacreds. DK gives us on 517 only two sacred planets for the average man. And for the undeveloped man, maybe it stays the same, but he talks about centers which are not the ajna sacral. He talks about the heart center and the head center. So why, for the average man who is still more developed than the undeveloped man, should there be non-sacred planets ruling the heart and the head, namely Sun and Pluto? And for the undeveloped man, there should be sacred planets ruling the heart and the head. So these are mysteries to be worked out by the intuition. But it never hurts to know the planet associated with both, with the soul ray and the personality ray. For instance, if you have a fifth-ray soul and a fourth-ray personality, you've got Venus associated with the soul and Mercury with the personality, unless we decide to use the non-sacred planet, which would be the Moon. So the planets which are, in a way, the soul-ray rulers, let us call these, oh, that's sub-races, that won't do, soul-ray rulers, and the personality ray rulers are important to know. See, in my own case, if let's say I have a second ray soul, Jupiter would be important, then maybe a fourth ray personality would be Mercury, or if it was a sixth ray personality, it would be Neptune. So in each one of our cases, let us try to decipher what the soul ray ruler may be, and how it would be conveying the rays to various chakras, and what the personality ray ruler would be doing. See, the personality ray ruler might be working out not only through the head or the heart, but through other centers which are correlated with that particular planet or ray that comes through it. So I guess DK is telling us that the interrelation of energies is most complex, and all he can do is to indicate possibilities and leave it to time and to intuition to clarify the matter in greater detail. And, you know, if we're impatient, well, we will not welcome that possibility, but it's wise to know when you're a master what is possible and what is not possible. So, moving on then, certain basic assertions can nevertheless be made. And we want to say here, despite the complexity of rays and levels of evolution, the rays, levels of evolution, and the awakening, awakened state, or awakened or unawakened state of the or the awakened or unawakened state of the centers, or their focus above or below the diaphragm, Pia, Nice to spell that word. Tough one. Be good one for a spelling bee. But certain basic assumptions can be made. He's just, even after 80 years here, of course, it's impending, another 10 years or so, another 12 years, and his next astrological presentation may be possible. And, one can really look forward to that. When I think about future lives, I know I want to be reading those books or whatever form he makes this transmission in. So far, that transmission has not been made. Claims to the contrary. I often say, it better, whatever you say, if you say it's from DK, it better be what you yourself could not write. And we know when we encounter what DK has written, we know in all humility what it is that we could write from out of our own knowledge and reasoning, or even intuition, and what only a master can write. And even in the beginning books, Letters on Occult Meditation and Initiation Human and Soul, this simply information which no human being who was not high in the ashram or even a master of the wisdom could actually write. So humility is necessary here. So all the centers are governed by one or other of the rays, and I would say sometimes by multiple rays. As you know, the Ajna Center seems to be governed by so many. I've listed actually all the seven in one way or another, either the etheric Ajna Center or the astral Ajna Center. And there are ways of, especially the synthetic centers, of connecting more than one ray. For instance, connecting more than one ray. If we look at the sacral center, yes, there is certainly the seventh ray for form production, but it's also the home of the mental elemental, connecting it with the third ray. And most of the sexual problems in the world today are related, he says, to the sixth ray. So we've got to expect that Mars, which rules sex, will have to do with the sacral center and so forth. So one or other of the rays, and sometimes by multiple rays, but I think he tries to spare us from the complexity of the subject. So we are in the middle here of some basic assumptions, and the rays use the planets as transmitting agencies. These are not the intraplanetary ray lords, which every planet has, but these are the rays that are coming from the Great Bear and in their will aspect and beyond. And we know which rays in this world cycle are related to the different planets. But conceivably, different rays could eventually work through planets with which they have no present apparent affiliation. You know, what if we learned that somehow the second ray was going to work through Mars? Well, it would be a stretch of the imagination, wouldn't it? But we could see how these great ray lords would choose different vehicles. Now, in the same way, the human being has different personality rays. Has different personality rays at different times. So the planetary logoi could have conceivably different personality rays at different times. The great sources of the rays could choose different planets as vehicles. At least in this world cycle, whatever a world cycle is, and that's just as it's just as ambiguous a term, equally ambiguous as the or with as the term world period, which seems to be to me, to my way of thinking, a little longer. But at least we know the present connection now. Planetary logoi are complex beings, and they have the monad, soul, and personality, and probably they have the different vehicles of the personality as well. So there is a complexity of rays there with any planetary expression, but we sort of single out one or two the ray of the soul and the personality, especially the ray of the personality if we're dealing with a non-sacred planet with the soul ray emerging, and especially the ray of the soul if we're dealing with a sacred planet with the personality ray absorbed into the soul ray and the monadic ray becoming more occultly effective than is possible in a non-sacred planet. All right, so these two basic assertions, not just assumptions, he's stating a fact, I assert the fact, that all the centers are governed by one or other of the rays, and we know what they are in this world cycle. So here is the presentation of all 12 planets, including the sun and moon, as veils. Vulcan, first ray, Mercury, fourth ray, Venus, fifth ray, Jupiter, second ray, Saturn, third ray. And again, notice, he reverses the order from the sun of Neptune and Uranus. Why does he do that? To preserve the order of manifestation, possibly? Is it because Neptune doesn't really belong to our solar system at all? Is it because Neptune is somehow more accessible than Uranus is? Is it because of the monadic rays here? Where basically, he's giving us 3, 2, and 1 in order of the monadic rays. Saturn, third ray monad, Neptune, second ray monad, Uranus, first ray monad. Why does he reverse it? Okay, and here we're not dealing with planets in order from the sun, because the Earth is closer than Mars, and Pluto's farther out than the Moon, of course. And then there's the sun itself, veiling a hidden planet, wherever that may be. And it does not discuss here of that the fact that the sun veils a planet. This planet is usually considered to be hidden or undiscovered. But perhaps not, you know, perhaps not. Although pretty well we know what the discovered planets are, so I wonder if we're going to be able to, I'm not going to be able to do this, and I'm not going to worry about it either. Let's just let it go. All right. Not doing so well here, huh? Maybe here. Sometimes a little bit of seventh ray comes out in my nature, and I want a graph to be orderly, if at all possible. A graph or a chart. Anyway, these are the 12, and of one of them, Vulcan, we are told it exists, and we have an idea where it is. Those who have studied the undiscovered planets think that the hidden planet may be Rex. And then there's also the question of Sigma, wherever that may be found. So I'm going to make this a little smaller so I can get it all where it belongs. Maybe Rex, okay. And then as far as the sun, the planet the sun veils, well, there is some association with the far-out planet Isis, which is undiscovered and hypothesized, but it's so far out of our system with a period of some 360 years, hypothesized, and no real orbit other than a circular orbit, that I'm not sure it's safe to talk about it, except that indeed there is an undiscovered planet which is the recipient of Sirian energy. Presumably it would have to go through the sun first, then to this undiscovered planet, and then to the three synthesizing planets. So here are the sacred and non-sacred planets, and there's a veil cast over the planet ruled by the moon, or veiled by the moon. Can't be Vulcan again, can it? Because Vulcan is already mentioned, and this other planet connected to the sun. There's also an undiscovered planet within the orbit of Mercury called Adonis, at least according to Charles Jayne and his book, The Undiscovered Planets. The planet Adonis, the Adonis of mythology, may be thought of, or how about considered, so we don't end with a preposition. All right, so Ordinary humanity is, now these are really, really important indications. Matter of fact, some people who are really interested in practical astrology, they go right to this page first. You know, they basically start working on page 511 or 512, whatever it is, 513 by this time. And they, without assimilating necessarily all that is said of these planets, they want the practical how-to. There's always a danger, you know, sometimes the seventh ray, fifth ray wants immediate how-to, and some of the more abstract rays stay in the realm of theory without using or accessing the how-to. There's got to be a blend. So ordinary humanity is ruled by the exoteric planet. Advanced humanity, disciples, and initiates by the esoteric planets. And that's quite a statement. We would say, is there any mixture? Or is this mixture found only on the path of aspiration, which is not the path of discipleship or the path of initiation? So advanced humanity, and he doesn't necessarily call them disciples and initiates, does he? It may be advanced humanity and disciples and initiates. It's also possible that advanced humanity may be considered aspirants. And even those who are highly developed but are not aspiring. They are advanced at least in terms of what the average human being has achieved. So is it exclusively the esoteric planets? Because, you know, over here on 517, he says disciples and initiates, esoteric planets. Or are we simply dealing again with a generality? Probably in any particular individual, there would be an individual case, individual evaluation or diagnosis, and we'd have to see what planetary ray was particularly working through a particular planet, whether it was an alternation between two possibles or whether it was strictly one or the other. And again, we could get a felt sense of this, you know, when in our solar plexus we feel fiery and angry and combative, you know, probably Mars is working through it, but when we have longing and transcendental feelings and sublime feelings and we're touching the higher levels of the astral plane, perhaps, or maybe even touching the intuition, we would have to say, well, Neptune is at work here. So we'd have to isolate the circumstances and say, okay, according to the circumstances I see, which planet is at work? No one is going to save us from self-observation. We don't have to identify with the lower self in order to observe it. I've tried to explain that to some, that to be observant of the lower self is not the same thing as thinking you are the lower self. This is important, and the first ray and fifth ray of Leo, which are abstracting rays, help us stand back and see that self, for that lower self for what it is, without thinking that we are necessarily that. The sun sign with the exoteric planetary rulers rules the personality, indicates inheritance and equipment, maybe through the aspects, and position, and is the summation of that which has been, thus providing a background. And we would say here, what about the moon and the habit nature? And yet it is definitely so that the sun can be considered, probably through the non-sacred planet that it rules, the accumulation of all that has been and is readily available. I'll put this down. Accumulation of all that has been and is readily available, readily and consciously available. The moon sign may indicate such an accumulation, but this runs deeper and is not necessarily consciously accessible. You have to bring things up, you know, from that deep pool of the subconscious. You may not even want to. But those things are there in our nature, and the conscious attention really knows nothing about them unless Pluto or Scorpio are at work activating the factor of memory. Now, I know some pioneers, Stephen Pugh among them, has put the sun, created a chart in which the sun sign is the ascendant, and this sets us up for a possible superimposition, which the Solar Fire program can do. I think Nicholas Nalén and some others recommended the Solar Fire try to create a superimposition of qualities, superimposition of charts, and there are various ways of doing this that gets into the details. But we were teaching this in our astrology class, and there are ways to put two wheels down on the same plane, one of which has the sun at the ascendant, the other has the ascending sign at the ascendant, and see how things fall out. See what is the tendency of the personality under the sun sign, and what is the possibility for that personality trying to express the soul under the rising sign. So if we want to look at maybe Earth in relation to a sign opposite the sun, that's a heliocentric Earth, it has some very high meanings, but maybe it also has some lower meanings. It's a exoteric planet in a way, non-esoteric. It's a non-sacred planet. But the exoteric planetary rulers, you could take every house, and you could say, okay, or every arm for that matter, but let's stick to the houses. If you have Cancer rising, it's going to be the moon that rules the first house. And then, assuming that there are not intercepted houses, the sun will rule the second, and Mercury the third, and Venus the fourth, and so forth. And you would look at the sign that that planet is in, and its aspects, and whether it's on any angles or not, and its progressions, and so forth. And you might understand something about the personality. Of course, some people have, in a way, absorbed the personality so much into their sense of soul consciousness that the personality is no longer such an independent factor. It's called the absorption of the personality ray into the soul ray. So again, it all depends on whether a person is strictly a personality, is in transition, and two sets of rulers may be fighting it out in some way, or whether they have made the transition entirely and the esoteric rulers are at work. In our classes, we have gotten more into specifics on this, but the necessary thing is to know really exactly where you stand, or pretty much where you stand, and whether one set of rulers or the other is dominating, not that it should be dominating necessarily. If you are an aspiring disciple, the esoteric ruler should be dominating. And you can take the ruler of every position and say, well, this is what I'm like in relation to these outer house circumstances when I'm being a personality, and this is what I am like or would be like if I treated this area of life more as a soul. You know, like for instance, someone with Aries on the midheaven, they could be a combative warrior type, constantly conflicted in the area of their profession, always fighting it out with others, or they could be more the mercurial type, using the esoteric ruler, and there their profession would be involving writing and the mind and the use of intuition, and they would be strongly communicative rather than combative. You see, we could go through every house and look at the rulers, either esoteric or exoteric, as related to the kinds of circumstances you find in that house. Now, for each type of ruler, there would be 12 personality possibilities and 12 more soul-guided possibilities. And this, of course, you would have to work out for yourself. My ridiculous entirety makes me want to do it, but you know, it's a little bit futile, because if you get the principle, you can do it for yourself, and we can apply it to things that really need solving. The rising sign with the esoteric planetary ruler indicates sole purpose and points the way to the future, offering opportunity. Now, since Saturn is the god of opportunity, there's that word used in two contexts. In what sense is the rising sign Saturnian? Or is it really Uranian? Because Uranus is hierarchically... connected with the first house for advanced individuals. But Uranus may be taking it a little bit too far, because that's more the factor of being that is related to the monad. So the esoteric ruler is what we have to understand. But the uniqueness of the individual, his particular soul pattern, as may be found in the Uranian conception chart, could be partially indicated at the first house. And Dane Rudyard seemed to think so, that the rising degree was really the most important degree that we could have. He didn't take into consideration the degree opposite the sun's degree. Which for people who could respond in terms of being or monad or spirit would be a still more important degree. So the rising sign with the esoteric planetary rulers indicates soul purpose. So right away you know you have to compare the tendencies of your sun sign with the tendencies of your rising sign, don't you? Because one will pretty much reinforce the present possibilities or probabilities, the potency of the sun of probability, or the sun of probability, as it has been referred to earlier in the book. If we don't do the unexpected thing and venture into the higher realms, and we pretty well sustain the rhythm that has been established in the past, we will live out our sun sign. Now, I think most of us are living out some combination of our rising sign and sun sign, and just the way we try to make the personality ray the sub-ray of the soul ray, so we should be making the sun quality, the quality of the sun sign, subsidiary to the quality of the rising sign. So basically, if you use these superimposed charts, we could consider that at any house we have the possibility of two rulers. And in the beginning, we just have to look at the sun sign and the rising sign and contrast them. Now, how a horoscope is set up so that it's based upon the rising sign, it's also possible to put the sun sign on the ascendant, and so you would have both your ascending sign and your sun sign on the ascendant. I'll give my own case. You know, since I have an Aries sun, in the first house I would have Cancer rising sign and the Aries sun. The Cancer rising sign would be superimposed over the Aries sun, and I would have to look at first house matters in terms of either a Neptunian rulership, which is esoteric for Cancer, or a Martian rulership, which is exoteric for the Sun, moving on in equal houses at least to the second house, I would find that Taurus was the exoteric ruler of the second house, because from Aries, Taurus is the next sign, but it would be Leo for the second house. Given the Cancer rising sign, and my sun veiling Neptune would give the esoteric indications, and Venus would give the exoteric indications, and I'd have to look at those two in contrast. So I have two choices. I can just stick with the rising sign chart and just look at the esoteric and exoteric rulers of every house, and that is a legitimate way to do it, or I could turn the wheel in such a way that the ascendant was on the sun sign was on the ascendant, and the rising sign is also on the ascendant, and look at the relations that occur. Now, when planets are in houses, done this way, qualitatively, you don't have to necessarily think of the aspects. You could just say, ah, they're both in the same sign, and so in a way they can be superimposed upon each other. Actually, I should really try to show you this. But I think, you know, if you really want to see how this works, go talk to Nicholas Nilan, who has done a lot of this, and Stephen Pugh has been pioneering in this work. I don't know whether he uses the solar fire or not, to get the kinds of charts that Nicholas encouraged solar fire people to generate, and which can now be generated, these superimposed charts. I'm not going to bother with the details right now. I'm just going to recommend that you deal with those astrologers at some point if you want to go more deeply into the matter. So anyway, the rising sign with the esoteric planetary rulers indicates soul purpose, at least, and let's be realistic here, for that incarnation. Whether this is a soul purpose on its own plane or soul purpose as it is to work out in the outer world, or both, that can be determined. And points the way to the future, I wonder, to future incarnations or to a certain type of energy which will be important in the future, or is an indication of that quality of energy which will simply allow one to do the next thing that really has to be done instead of repeating the past. So there's different ways here of viewing the future. And we're getting to the point where I'm going to say that this is the end of Esoteric Astrology 131B. 132, is it? How did I begin this? I know that I did something unconventional, something I haven't done before. I changed the numbers and just kept going on the so-called tape. Yeah, this is 132A, so pretty soon we're going to have the end of 132A and the beginning of 132B. That's what it's all about. Maybe I can mention one more. The horoscope built around the sun sign is adequate for ordinary humanity. The exoteric planets rule, and the man lives within the limitations of the 12 houses. He is not refining their meaning or breaking out of those limitations. Sometimes a planet in a house may help the individual overcome the limitations of the circumstances associated with the house. Sometimes a planet may reinforce those limitations. So when we're dealing with people, we have to always ask ourselves, look, really, how are circumstances limiting the expression of the soul? And what can the individual do? How is he equipped to break out of those circumstances? You can imagine that Saturn, which breaks up conditions, strangely enough, sometimes it, you know, it may reinforce through rigidity certain conditions, but DK gives the new idea, relatively new, I think, that Saturn breaks up existing conditions. So, you know, you have Saturn in the seventh house, some marriages don't survive it. You have Saturn in the 10th house, some careers don't survive it when by transit it is emphasized. When Saturn is in the second house, the financial situation may receive so much pressure as to break up the existing financial condition. And I'm reminded of the chart of Marilyn Monroe, who had Saturn in the fourth house and was sent out to how many foster homes? I don't know. Over 10, I think, foster homes. So there was a definite circumstantial limitation there, and I guess we could ask whether somehow she ever used Saturn to break out of that possibility. When we have Uranus, it's a breakthrough planet, and it reorganizes everything. So let's just say, we'll put it like this, that Saturn, whoop, I don't want that. Okay. Saturn in a house breaks up circumstances if they cannot stand the pressure. Uranus in a house reorganizes those circumstances. and perhaps gives freedom from those, from the lower indications of a house. Well, you know, like Uranus in the first house, the tendency is to be body conscious. You know, it rules the dense physical body, but it also rules the personality. It also rules the causal body and maybe even a higher type of identity. So maybe there's really a change of identity, a change of what is the usual indication of the house. When we have Pluto, the destroyer in a house, the circumstances may also, the limiting circumstances may also be destroyed. All right then, this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 132A. It's really, you know, I'm working on the same long series of tapes, so there's 131A in this as well. Page 513, very practical part of the book, and beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 132B, page 513.